From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today we're devoting an hour to the state of Michigan's economy. Will Michigan's businesses be able to survive the economic fallout from the pandemic?
About one in four, at least in Michigan, have been catastrophically or at least majorly negatively impacted.
Will 2021 be the year that many more small businesses disappear in the wake of big companies?
Large employers have largely been able to manage this pandemic because they have the funding and the resources to do so, where the smaller companies absolutely have not.
And amidst the pandemic unemployment, are bigger long-term economic issues finally seeing the light of day?
Of all of the affluent countries in the world, we are the most unequal in our income distribution. Undertaking policies like the tax cut 3 years ago, which would exacerbate income inequality, I don't think that was a great move.
All of that and more coming up today on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today on the program, we welcome Detroit Regional Chamber President Sandy Barua and Dustin Walsh of Cranes Detroit Business to talk about the year that was and what a year it was.
I would call it a perforated ulcer. And I call it a perforated ulcer because, you know, it's painful and the things are getting left behind and are not making it through that digestive tract of the economy.
That's coming up later in the hour. But first, 2020 began with such high hopes for the U.S. economy and Michigan's piece of it. Then came the pandemic. While Wall Street's hopes remain high, where do we as Michiganders fit into the American economic picture? Can we expect a slow rebound in 2021, or is this just the edge of a much deeper precipice? To get a better understanding of where we are and where things are headed, let's turn to Michigan State economics professor and Stateside regular Charlie Ballard. Charlie, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you, April. Glad to be with you.
If you had to pick a metaphor to describe the year in economic terms, and let me stress this, a metaphor that's appropriate for a family public radio station, what would you say?
Okay, that's well, it's been a wild, wild ride. It's kind of like we were out in a little canoe in the middle of the ocean, and we got wet, and it's been very unpleasant. It's slowly getting better. We're getting closer to shore, but how's that for a metaphor? Does that work for you?
A canoe in the ocean, yes. Or maybe Lake Superior, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, Lake Superior in November.
It's been brutal, quite frankly. Can you talk to us about what sectors you see being hardest hit this year?
Oh, no question. Leisure and hospitality is the sector that was absolutely slammed. Restaurants, bars, hotels, anything to do with travel and tourism, airline industry. If you work at Detroit Metro, you see a lot less traffic. So all of those things, those are the ones that have been by far the hardest hit. And then retail, ordinary brick and mortar retail, a lot of those stores have greatly struggled. Some have gone out of business. On the other hand, if you're involved in delivery, internet sales that get delivered by UPS or FedEx, all of that has done very well. And another sector that's done extremely well is anything to do with the home. Because people have been staying home, they've been planting a lot of shrubs, they've been doing home improvement projects. So some sectors have done well. Overall, this has been a really bad year.
You know, I know you were just stating a fact, but I think I'm just going to use what you said a moment ago as a metaphor. 2020 was the year when leisure and hospitality just took a dive. It's a statement of mood this year as much as anything else.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the policy responses to what's been happening. We have seen Michigan's leaders largely waiting to see what the federal government might offer in terms of a second stimulus package. And that's dominated the news in recent weeks, in addition to being a topic for the year. Are there things that government might do right now that might set 2021 up for slightly better times?
Well, the state governments and local governments are severely constrained by the laws that govern how much they can borrow and the drop in revenue associated with the economic recession. So I really look to the federal government. And frankly, the federal government in March and April did a darn good job. Federal Reserve injected a great deal of liquidity into the financial markets to keep them more or less stable. And we had a very large stimulus package. It wasn't perfect, but it sure did help. Now we are in serious need, pretty serious need of a new stimulus. And unfortunately, at least as of right now, when we're talking to each other, the two sides haven't been able to come together. I'm very hopeful that they will. By the time this is broadcast, maybe they will have. The last few months have been disappointing in terms of the House and Senate being unable to put aside their differences and concentrate on the places where they do, in fact, agree. There's general agreement about most of the things that might go into a stimulus. There's only a few things that they disagree about, but that's been enough to stop the negotiations, at least up till now.
Charlie, what did we learn about Michigan's workforce in 2020?
I think we learned that Michigan's workforce, we are hardworking people. We are resilient. We've taken these punches and we're still standing. But one thing that we've known for years and years is that in terms of educational attainment, Michigan's workforce is below the national average. That's been true for decades. And 50 years ago, it didn't really matter so much because you could just get out of high school and go to the Ford or the GM factory and make really good money. That's changed. And so we have slipped somewhat relative to the national average in a variety of measures. In 2018 and 2019, we were 32nd among the 50 states in terms of per capita income. 2020 is so weird, the rankings might get jumbled some, but by the time the dust settles in 22, I think we'll be pretty close to that same place because of these long-term structural features of our economy that we haven't been able to take as much advantage as some other places of the high-tech, high-skill sectors that have done so well in the recent decades.
Charlie, the U.S. is a country that historically has not really spent much time grappling with the issues of how workers get to where they work. What workers are doing with their families in their downtime, you know, what kind of family structures they have at home that might or might not support them in the workplace. The U.S. is just the kind of country that keeps its hands off of that sort of thing. Do you think that 2020 and the pandemic and the ensuing healthcare crisis and childcare crisis and every other crisis that's piled up, do you think that what we've seen happen this year might be a recipe for some kind of change?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who have had their eyes opened to issues that perhaps they previously had not been very much aware of or didn't pay much attention to. Another one that I might mention is, I think, the death of George Floyd last May in horrific circumstances opened the eyes of some white Americans to the fact that, yes, there is a systemic problem. So I think that perhaps this could be a watershed moment. I certainly hope it is. I hope that it will push us in the direction of addressing some of these childcare issues, some of the public health issues that have, I think, too long been on the back burner. But gosh, will it get translated into concrete action? That remains to be seen. I think 2021 is going to be a very, very interesting year to see how a new Congress and a new president deal with some of these issues.
Donald Trump's time in the White House is coming to an end. And many of the voters who support Donald Trump say that his grasp of America's business issues is a big part of his appeal for them. Could you assess the Trump presidency as an economist and Trump's performance and what he said he was going to do in terms of what it meant for Michigan?
Yeah, I wouldn't give him very high marks, frankly. I guess in terms of economic policy, there are two main things that he did or tried to do. One was in terms of international trade, he started a variety of trade wars. We did get a renegotiation of NAFTA. That was a step in the right direction. But the tit-for-tat tariffs against China, I frankly think that that was the wrong approach. I would have gone with a much more multilateral approach because the Europeans and the Japanese and the Canadians, they all have issues with China's trade policies. But what President Trump did was he emphasized America first, which meant America going it alone without our allies. And I think that was a strategic mistake. Frankly, I don't think that the trade war has been a success. The other thing that he did or that was passed in 2017 was the tax cut. It was primarily a cut for taxes for corporations, which means that in terms of who benefited from it, probably most of the benefits went to very high income individuals, especially those with large stock market portfolios. And whether you like that or not like that depends probably upon what you think about income inequality. And my values are such that I think we have, in the United States, we know we have the most unequal. Of all of the affluent countries in the world, we are the most unequal in our income distribution. And so undertaking policies like the tax cut 3 years ago, which would exacerbate income inequality, I don't think that was a great move.
Charlie, could we talk a little bit more about the isolationist trade policies of the past 4 years? Why is it that you would argue that they put Michigan at a disadvantage? What is it about our core industries that makes us need other players that are our economic allies?
Well, let's look at the tariffs on steel and aluminum. Almost all of the workers in America who are involved with steel or aluminum, it's not people who are making steel and aluminum, it's people who are using steel and aluminum in making something else. Thus, those tariffs were not a good thing for the auto industry, and the auto industry is still very big. Even after all the shrinkage of the last 50 years, autos are still a big deal in Michigan. And so something that increased the costs of making a car, I don't see that as a wise policy from our perspective. But in terms of the broader question of should we go it alone or should we have our allies? Well, anytime we've got friends, we should work together with our friends. And our friends are many of the countries in Western Europe. President Trump tended not to be very nice to our friends and tended to be quite nice to our enemies like Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un. So I think you're going to see a reversal of that. I think you're going to see in the Biden administration much more of a change toward working multilaterally. And in my view, that's a step in the right direction. I think that if we were to join with the Europeans, the Japanese, the Australians, Canada, we could put pressure on China in ways that we can't when we go it alone.
Charlie Ballard is a professor of economics at Michigan State University and a semi-regular here on Stateside. Charlie, thanks for the insight, and hang in there. We're almost to the end of the year.
You're welcome, April. Happy holidays, and let's have a good 2021.
Coming up, Dustin Walsh of Detroit Cranes Business and Detroit Regional Chamber President and CEO Sandy Barua share their analysis of Michigan's economic state at the end of 2020. Stay with us. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. 2020. For those heavily invested in the stock market, it has been the best of times. For those waiting in food lines across Michigan, not so much. To further expand our discussion of the state of Michigan's economy and where things might be headed in 2021, we're now joined by two guests who follow Michigan business extremely closely, Dustin Walsh of Cranes Detroit Business and Sandy Barua, president of the Detroit Regional Chamber. Dustin, Sandy, welcome back to Stateside, both of you.
Thank you.
To be with you.
I want to start with a question that I put to MSU economist Charlie Ballard in the last segment. If there were a metaphor for the 2020 economy, what would it be? I mean, I guess you could say merry-go-round broke down or use the obligatory term dumpster fire or talk about the holiday party gone as terrifyingly awry as Bob Dylan's Christmas album. But seriously, how do you think about this, Sandy?
So the 2020 economy was brought to you by the letter K. And I think this term K-shaped economy is really beginning to take hold in our business discussions across the nation, because I think it's really telling. We are seeing a strong percentage of our population, our businesses, our families, our individuals that are surviving this COVID era quite well, some even thriving. But as you referred to, April, we are seeing a very substantial group of people, according to our polling, about one in four, at least in Michigan, that have been catastrophically or at least majorly negatively impacted by the COVID pandemic. And that's why you're seeing these unprecedented lines for food. At the same time, you see a stock market that's doing well, companies that are doing well, individuals really spending a lot of money, such as investing in their homes, for example. So we are definitely looking at a K-shaped economy along with a K-shaped recovery as we go into 2021.
Sandy, I don't want to be overdramatic, but there's something Dickensian here as we approach the end of the year and the holidays. And there has just been, you know, such complete chaos, you know, among working families and working class families specifically who've been running into job loss or at least diminishment of income and also any number of family issues from their own health to what the heck they're doing with their kids while they're trying to do the essential work that is part of their jobs. I mean, I don't know. It's just beyond anything in my lifetime. Dustin, what comes to mind if there were a metaphor for this year's economy?
Well, I'm going to get technical. I would call it a perforated ulcer. I think that's what I would call it, which is sort of funny and silly and painful, actually. But really, it's about, you know, there are things, we had a lot of highs early on in the year, but it was never perfect. And things were starting to get painful for families, as Sandy mentioned, a K-shaped kind of recovery here. You know, the K-shape existed before the pandemic. And I call it a perforated ulcer because, you know, it's painful and the things are getting left behind and are not making it through that digestive tract of the economy, just to tie it all in here. And Sandy's right. You know, what we're seeing is not the best way to recover and people do need help. But at the same time, it's sort of like, it's hard for people that haven't struggled, that people probably all in this room that have economically been relatively okay. And so it's hard to see it. But the reality is that going back to the ulcer, this economy does need urgent medical attention or urgent economic attention because it's not going to go this way forever. You know, the long-term unemployment continues to grow in the state of Michigan. I couldn't tell you the exact number, but a good number of people are on the extended benefits program, which covers basically over a year of unemployment. Those people, you know, have left the workforce essentially, and there's a lot more people that have officially left the workforce. Mm-hmm. So those are problems that we're going to feel next year. And so that's really what I think 2020 set up was really showing the problems we already had in the economy and is going to make them much worse next year if we don't figure it out.
April,
yes.
If I could just jump and expand on Dustin's comment. First of all, kudos to Dustin for a far more graphic description of the 2020 economy, much better than mine, but also really amplify what Dustin said about these pre-existing conditions about our economy. I mean, 2020 has accelerated a lot of trends. I mean, certainly the work from home trend, you know, which is kind of like the duh moment of 2020, but also the wealth gap that has been growing in America very, very strongly over the last 20 years, really has accelerated in 2020. It really kind of has turned our K-shaped economy into a capital K-shaped economy.
May I ask both of you what you're hearing from larger sized employers in the Metro Detroit area? What are you hearing from them? We'll move on to small businesses in just a minute, but what kind of year has it been? Sandy, for example, among the larger members of the chamber.
Well, businesses that I would call like, you know, in the traded clusters, manufacturing, financial services, other professional services, construction are doing well, in some cases, very well. When you look at the manufacturing sector in particular, we're seeing strong demand for manufactured products, including vehicles. Certainly, 2020 is going to end the year much better than expected. When it comes to vehicle sales, we'll probably be around the 15 million mark, if not even a touch higher than that, in terms of vehicle sales, which is certainly better than we all expected in April, May, June. But I'd also say that the strength of these traded clusters is reflected in Michigan's rating of as being a top 10 state. We are at 87% of our pre-COVID economic levels. And that wouldn't be happening if it weren't for manufacturing, construction, professional services, et cetera.
87%. That surprises me. I guess maybe my view is clouded a bit by what I see in small businesses in Michigan.
Yeah, that is a Moody's Analytics report from late summer, early fall, in partnership with CNN. And I think Michigan ranked 7th or 8th in the nation. Dustin might have a better number than me. But it really is due to the strength of our manufacturing sector and the percentage of manufacturing that makes up the Michigan economy that not all states have. But there's no doubt, and I know you're going to get to this, small businesses, definitely not part of that 87%.
Dustin, does that jive with what you hear?
Yeah, I mean, so basically, Sandy's absolutely right. So what we're seeing, and it goes down from the employee level to the employer. Large employers have largely been able to manage this pandemic because they have the funding and the resources to do so, where the smaller companies absolutely have not. And that goes to the same thing with the actual employees. If you look through October 15th, if you look in the state of Michigan, employment for high-wage employees is up almost 5%. It's down 21% for low-wage employees, those making less than $27,000 a year. So, I mean, the divide has been stark and obvious from the company level down to the employee level.
Okay, so let's talk about small businesses and perhaps also, I mean, I recognize that's different than lower wage workers. But Dustin, I know you cover an awful lot of small business. It just seems like there's so many storefronts that have shuttered and we may not see back open again.
Well, absolutely. I mean, small business revenue in the state of Michigan through the end of November is down more than 40%, which is astounding. And it's for those reasons. A lot of small businesses, you know, are the ones that are impacted by the shutdown orders simply because of the nature of what they do, whether it be a restaurant or a small retailer that can't adjust, you know, and they just don't have the means to adjust. And that's been like the really hard thing for all of this is we can argue over what was necessary and what wasn't. But no matter what is happening, it's the same case through every state in the country, regardless of whether they've done shutdown orders or not, is small businesses have been the ones that have been decimated. And that's something that we're going to have to really deal with in the future. The United States economy was already one of the least competitive economies for new businesses to enter into for small businesses in recent memory. You know, in 1972, we started more new businesses on an annual basis than we do currently. We just don't start small businesses like we used to. And so losing these small businesses is going to have an effect that is going to be detrimental. You know, it's Amazon's world, and I guess we're all just living in it at this point.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Sandy Barua, president of the Detroit Regional Chamber, and we're also talking with Dustin Walsh of Crane's Detroit Business. Sandy, what do we know about what does help small businesses that are going to go the distance? Is there anything on your mind as we look toward what we certainly hope are the final stages of the pandemic? Is there anything that you can say you've seen small businesses doing that have been able to ride this out?
Well, first, I would say, April, that we as an organization are very hesitant to say that kind of we're in the final stages of the pandemic. I mean, we're certainly looking at least another 6, 7, 8 months maybe of, you know, this really still being a barrier, especially for small business success. I mean, you know, the state of Michigan has set the goal of 70% of our citizens being inoculated with one of the new vaccines by the end of the year. But that's a long way away, and we still have a lot of recovery to do kind of in the meantime and following that. But in terms of, you know, what has made small businesses successful, there is no one set of answers for that. A lot of it depends on the industry that they're in. Certainly businesses, even small businesses that have just that little bit of extra heft, either in terms of business savvy, kind of financial savvy, financial connections, you know, resources such as, you know, friends who can serve as consultants and coaches that have been able to be flexible. I mean, we know that there are retail outlets out there that have been affected by the shutdown orders, but have been able to successfully pivot to an online business or a curbside delivery business, you know, using social media, using other connectivity. That has been tremendously helpful. But frankly, it is really foolhardy to think that government assistance has not been a key factor, particularly government assistance coming from the federal government. The PPP program that was launched in the early days of the crisis was intended to be a short-term program, but it did carry a lot of businesses, not necessarily the really small businesses. You had to be financially savvy to at least a basic degree. Certainly, you had to have a banking relationship, and there's a surprising number of micro businesses, small businesses that don't even have that.
I want to talk some more about what the federal government might have to offer. But before we get into that, I know that this has had impact in many of our personal lives, as well as the professional areas that we cover. But is 2020 the year when family issues and health issues came crashing into employers' consciousness?
Yes, without a doubt, yes. I think there are permanent changes that, you know, have been on the horizon for some time that are now being forced, their hands being forced. There's without a doubt, this has been the hardest year for working mothers, probably on record, you know, barring some sort of wartime insanity from many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it really opened up the fissures in that aspect as well. Employees likely will have, particularly in office jobs and other things, are likely going to have a lot more power. You know, I don't see myself ever going back to the office 5 days a week. My wife and I both work, and the things that have gone on have really showed the things that we need to do at home. And so I think a lot of those issues are going to be brought to the forefront. And let's not, you know, forget about racial equality, which played a huge role in 2020 as well. And I think you're going to see all these things that have been started, and they're going to be expedited because companies went through kind of a learning lesson on this stuff throughout the year. And you're going to see more of it in 2021. And I would expect to see it moving in the right direction, hopefully, for everyone.
Any number of industries we could talk about in Michigan and nationally who went through a reckoning about their own hiring and retention practices, for sure. Sandy, the question of how the home has bled into the workplace, every working parent I know kind of echoes what Dustin just said. And I guess the way I feel, too, as a working parent, that, you know, there are many, many things that won't be the same after this. But I wonder, from your lens, do you think that people in decision-making capacity in boardrooms feel the same way about this, that there are some things that do need to change?
Absolutely. First of all, Dustin captured it perfectly in terms of how business runners have had to deal with family and individual issues unlike ever before. So I would just share two things. Number one, I think we really need to think about the COVID era as not as a time when we all or many of us worked from home, but as a time that we lived at work. You know, we are seeing, you know, kind of the stress, even from people in professional positions that have that remote ability, that even if they're not dealing with children, which, as Dustin mentioned, makes the problem exponentially worse, but really kind of never being off the clock. And that's going to be an issue that we're going to have to address. The second thing I would say is that in talking to major employers, they have seen and are attempting to deal with personal issues, really difficult, sticky, critical and personal issues such as spousal abuse, alcoholism, you know, real mental health issues driven by the isolation, driven by the dynamics of the COVID environment that human resources departments have never really had to deal with in mass or to the level that they are now. And that has been a tremendous new experience for businesses, especially larger businesses.
I mean, are we talking about something like, you know, maybe healthcare reform getting back off the ground in Washington? I know that your focus is more on Michigan and Metro Detroit, but do you foresee something like that happening, or at least maybe more of an openness or, you know, a demand for some kind of more durable social service structure?
I'll say this. I think, April, that really depends on how the Biden administration unfolds. And I think we've got to look at two key factors here. One, will both the Democrats and the Republicans allow the new administration to be a success? Democrats do a great job of being a circular firing squad and not allowing their own to be successful. I think we're seeing some hints of that as President-elect Biden goes through his transition period where he's getting a good deal more sniping from the sidelines than I had expected. Certainly, we'll see how the Republicans, you know, kind of treat the Biden presidency. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, how outgoing President Donald Trump treats his post-presidency and how he uses his very substantial platform to either, you know, kind of for good or for kind of agitation purposes. So certainly a healthcare package would be a high priority for the Biden-Harris administration. If either the Democrats or Republicans are going to allow that to happen, that's film at 11.
Right. I wanted to note that at least some of the demand on the part of the public and employers and employees may have to do with general attitudes toward government and its ability to deal with some of these big issues in people's lives. Sandy, I know that the chamber did some research not too long ago into how Michiganders view priorities and just how they feel about the state government's response to the pandemic. Can you run us through some of the main takeaways?
Well, just real briefly, one of the things is that, Michiganders have not laxed at all in terms of their commitment to mask wearing. Our earlier polls, we've been doing a series of statewide polling with the Glengariff Group. 80% of Michiganders continue to wear a mask in public. In indoor settings, that has held steady. That's great news. Michiganders have strongly prioritized the first priority for kind of as we exit the active COVID crisis is to focus on rebuilding our small business community. That was by far the number one answer there. And another highlight would be that kind of the poor relations between the executive branch and the legislative branch in Lansing is no longer kind of an inside ball discussion amongst political types and media types. Michiganders kind of across the state now fully understand that our legislative branch and our executive branch are not working well together. And that's not a good thing. That's not good for Michigan, especially as we move into our recovery period.
We're going to step aside for a brief moment. But when we return, we'll continue our discussion on Michigan economics with Dustin Walsh of Detroit Cranes Business and Detroit Regional Chamber President and CEO Sandy Barua. Don't go away. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Sandy Barua, president of the Detroit Regional Chamber, and we're also talking with Dustin Walsh of Cranes Detroit Business. Guys, let's talk a little bit about what might happen in Washington right now. Obviously, COVID stimulus was extremely well received the first time around, and it has just been a job for Congress to get on the same page about, and with the White House, about some kind of second stimulus package. First of all, I wonder what you're hearing from the folks that you talk to and that you cover about what might be useful to them right now. Dustin, what kinds of things do people bring up?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, it depends on where they are in the system. But I think people undoubtedly want more money to the consumer. After watching what happened the first time, consumer spending basically dropped off the map, in late March, early April. I think by April 1st, it was down almost 40%. And then consumer spending, basically by midsummer was higher than it was before the pandemic. And it really showed what people were doing with the stimulus payments that started coming in mid-April. Consumers were spending, even low-income consumers who were losing their jobs were still spending because they were getting, gratuitous unemployment checks and the stimulus payments. So I think if you look what business wants, business would like that to happen again, I think, overall, because they want the economy to continue on the path that it's been on. And that, it's limping along in a lot of areas. But consumer spending, generally speaking, hasn't been the area that's been the problem. So if all things being equal, they would love to see more stimulus come through. Because people, as we all know, people are starting to struggle. Those dollars are running out. You can't eat, you can't buy a TV. And so businesses overall would just love to see this package worked out as soon as humanly possible.
Sandy, how about you? What are you hearing?
Yeah, Dustin's right. It certainly depends. What we're promoting is not necessarily a direct kind of universal stimulus payments like we had earlier in the spring with the $1,200. We're suggesting for individuals who are on unemployment, kind of that bottom shape of that K, as we discussed earlier, receive $300 a week in additional federal assistance. So we're really focusing federal unemployment assistance on those who are unemployed, because again, we have a lot of people across the country that are doing quite well or have been unimpacted by this crisis. Earlier, I think we talked about the small businesses and how that we need to adapt the Paycheck Protection Program that was launched early in the crisis in several different ways. One, we need to ease the forgiveness rules for those who already had a PPP loan. We need to ensure that small businesses, truly small businesses, can access the program. That has been an ongoing challenge with the PPP program. And also, the PPP program was built as a short-term kind of crutch solution, assuming that our crisis was going to last weeks or at least months that you can count on one hand. We realize now that this is going to be a year plus crisis. So companies that took a PPP loan back in the early days might need to access it again. That's currently not allowed. We need to open that up again. So we have priorities for individuals and we have priorities for business as well.
I guess I was kind of surprised that COVID stimulus turned out to be the divisive issue that it was in 2020. I mean, there was a time when the Republican Party was perceived as significantly pro-business along the lines that, you know, maybe support for businesses in crisis would not have been a difficult topic. I mean, I guess you could argue it's just that support for business is maybe taking a different form in today's Republican Party, more along the lines of limits on legal liability for businesses regarding COVID infections. But I wanted to ask you both what you hear from business owners when they see Congress unable to agree on what to do. It seems like this has been a challenging year for a lot of people who might otherwise have had very defined ideas about what support for business might mean. Sandy, what do you hear from people about that?
Well, it kind of depends on, you know, which sector you're talking to. Certainly the issue that you're raising, April, which is liability protection, is a big issue for businesses. One, there's so much about this virus we don't know. We don't know what the long-term impacts are for people who have had it or who had it but may not have had symptoms. We don't know what the long-term impacts of what the vaccine are going to be. And, you know, businesses are rightfully afraid of, you know, COVID being the next kind of late night mesothelioma ads where law firms are filing class action lawsuits, even though businesses may have taken every state, federal, and industry precaution to keep their employees and their customers safe. So that is an issue that has been a stumbling block. Certainly the assistance, the direct assistance, especially if you're in the small business sector, that becomes more important for the small business sector because, again, as we mentioned earlier in this conversation, oftentimes for these small businesses, there is really no substitute for direct financial aid.
Dustin, how about you? What do you hear people saying?
For a lot of business owners, it depends on what side of the political coin they're on. You know, some people just completely disagree with any sort of stimulus. I mean, I hear from business owners that are just built that way. That's their fundamental belief in the system. I think others are angry that what they view as playing politics over what could potentially be the livelihood and lives of citizens. You do hear a little bit about the liability issue. It kind of goes both ways with a liability issue because, you know, a lot of employers are pretty well protected with liability, just on basic regular employment rules. But some are fearful because they know this is out there. And so, you know, if there's extra liability they can have, they want it.
Right. It looks like part of the hang up over the stimulus has been the question of whether state and local governments should get some help. You know, this is such an unsexy issue to talk about because it doesn't really have anything to do with putting money in consumers' pockets. But it feels like it's sort of the underlying story of at least part of the stimulus conversation. Do you see ways in which a lack of aid to state and local government could have an effect on businesses, or is the assumption that if we can just get the economy back on track, that things will take care of themselves?
Yeah. So the reason the support for state government in this time is really important in our view is that unless the vaccine distribution is effective and, you know, well run and really gets to the 70% of the American population that we need to get that herd immunity so we can start really getting back to normal, the states are a critical linchpin in that. And to just kind of shrug our shoulders and say, well, you know, the states are on their own for that, we have a national vested interest in ensuring the states are successful in this process. So that is why we would support state and local government assistance. Now, it is a political issue, no doubt. You know, there are philosophical oppositions to that, primarily on the Republican side. There's also a strong desire on behalf of most Republicans to ensure that any state aid that would be part of a federal package not be used to make up for current deficits that states have run. And there's many states, relatively large, often blue, as we call them now, Democratic-controlled states, that have very large public deficits. And the Republicans in Congress don't want to be paying for that. There's probably a legitimate point to be made there. But our view is, let's make sure the vaccine distribution is successful. That's job one.
Right. Dustin, I feel like Detroit businesses, especially small businesses, know better than to stay up late at night waiting for someone from the government to give them a hand. But is that a correct assessment? Do you feel like people are not necessarily concerned about that as a top line issue?
Well, I think it depends on where they are. If you're a small business, you don't have time to worry about, you know, whether the local government's going to bail you out or whether the federal government's going to bail out the local government. But overall, Sandy's right. I mean, and the reason why it affects all businesses is we forget that local governments employ 14 and a half million people. We went through a pandemic that in Michigan, there were 1 million people unemployed at one point. The state's unemployment insurance agency had to hire people to basically fill those gaps. It didn't go smoothly either. You know, and so this is a purely political issue. If it was a purely economic issue, there is no doubt that states and local governments need additional funding just to simply keep the economic structure moving. And that's good for business. So it depends on, you know, as Sandy mentioned, it depends on your philosophical viewpoint of whether that's considered bailing out governments that have done a poor job or not. But from an economic standpoint, you know, there's no doubt that the local governments need to receive their own funding during this pandemic.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Sandy Barua, president of the Detroit Regional Chamber, and we're also talking with Dustin Walsh of Crane's Detroit Business. I have a question for both of you, and Dustin, maybe you could start us off. What are the consequences of having so many people out of work for so long in our workforce?
Well, it comes down to who is out of work and what they're doing. Obviously, we've had thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people that have left the workforce permanently. So during this, they gave up even looking for work. So maybe that's they retired early and they're not drawing on their retirement yet. And maybe these people won't find a job. I mean, the ultimate thing is that our economy shrinks. As Sandy knows, and I've shouted from the mountaintops for some time, our population is not growing. Last year, I think we had 190,000 jobs that we couldn't fill in the state before COVID hit. So when the economy recovers, if these people don't return to the workforce, you know, that's a major problem for our economy overall. You know, the goal to be a top 10 state. If we're not recovering population and we're not recovering people in the workforce, that's a major, major issue. Obviously, then these structural long-term unemployment, when they return, what jobs are they? How much do they pay? The amount of people considered low income by the United Way standard has grown considerably and continues to grow. So those are all things we need to think about in the long term of this is, you know, we've fallen off a cliff and where do we recover? Do we get back to where we were and everything kind of goes back and we're building on higher wages? Or are we kind of stuck in this long-term rut again, as we witnessed through the last recession, the Great Recession, where things just kind of limp along and wages don't continue to grow and then people have a real issue, you know, sustaining their family.
Sandy, what would you say about the consequences of that long-term unemployment? Is anything to add to what Dustin already brought up?
You know, there is a universal rule of economic slowdowns, recessions, crises, whatever you want to call them or however you want to categorize them. And that is that out of every economic recession, we see an acceleration of technology and automation. It is highly likely that this particular economic crisis driven by COVID will see an even greater impact in terms of a move towards automation because this particular crisis is being, you know, driven by, well, human contact, you know, human beings touching things and touching each other, which is going to really accelerate automation right now.
Sandy, when you have to play the evangelist, if we could just return to Dustin's point about the fact that the state's population has been stagnant. You know, we're not gaining population. When you have to play the evangelist and talk to political leaders or business leaders about the importance of that, what kinds of things do you talk to them about?
Well, gee, as an Episcopalian, we don't do a lot of evangelizing. It's not quite our style. It really kind of interrupts our cocktail hour. But here's what I would say is that growing economies require growing population. You need look no further than Japan, which has been essentially in a 25-year, sometimes recession, but certainly a lack of growth. You know, this is why immigration is important. This is why encouraging and making the places, both rural and urban places in the state of Michigan, livable and attractive is important. We lost a tremendous amount of talent during the lost decade of kind of the 2000s in the state of Michigan. And when those talented people left, for some reason, they took their children with them. And so we don't have that next generation of population kind of working through our system. And if you look at kind of school populations like, you know, Detroit Public Schools, Detroit is, you know, one of, you know, certainly a very large city, you know, 750,000 people roughly, but we only have about 44,000 kids in Detroit Public Schools. So that kind of shows that we have lost a lot of people in this state and we can't grow economically without a growing population.
And I'll add, if you're talking to governments, all you need to say is you lost a congressional seat. And that continues to happen if we keep losing people.
That gets attention.
And the tax base that went with it.
Guys, let's talk a little bit about what is one of Michigan's absolute signature industries, maybe the one that people know us for more than anything else, and that's the automotive industry. I really thought we'd be spending the whole year talking about electrification, but instead, we've had suppliers making PPE, we've had public health concerns in the Big Three's manufacturing plants, and a real rocket ride in terms of the international market. I just wanted to ask, do you have any worries or just things that you're looking for in 2021 for the auto industry and Michigan's place in it? Dustin, you want to start out?
Sure. For me, it's the international market. It's whether the EU and other markets across the world are going to be as strong as they were. You know, we're seeing Germany kind of enter into its own recession before COVID even hit. You know, all these things have residual impact on an automotive industry that is so global. And trade is, it remains a massive deal with U.S. domestic automakers. So obviously the strength of the U.S. market is incredibly important. We're unsure where that's going to go. I don't see it necessarily going up and up. So the years of 17 million vehicles are probably over. So really it's going to rely on these either existing European markets or new markets for the auto companies. That's what I'm looking for in 2021, just to see what the global economy does overall.
Sandy, how about you?
Yeah, so I might disagree with Dustin a little bit about the return.
How dare you?
yeah, I know. I'm sorry. This is why I can do this remotely, Dustin. I don't have to worry about, you know, you tackling me in the parking lot.
Sure.
Which is a tackle I would lose. First of all, I think that with the automotive industry, particularly North America, surviving this crisis far better than expected, with the dynamics that we are seeing about, especially with the strong growth in suburban housing, that we might see a return, obviously not in 2021 or 2022, but, you know, in the next, you know, few years to, you know, a 17 million unit automotive sales. The difference, I think, is kind of how things are going to unfold. Electrification, I think we're going to see April continue along it, the trajectory that we saw prior to the pandemic. But that's primarily being driven by global government mandates. China, the EU, et cetera, they have not slackened any requirements for the move to electrification. In fact, you see that trend accelerating. So our manufacturers are adapting. You see these announcements by General Motors. You see the rollout of everything from an electrified Ford F-150 to a completely electric Cadillac SUV soon to be on the market. That's going to continue. I think the trend that is going to change is automation, the driverless vehicle. That, I think, you know, with the reprioritization of kind of finances of the automotive companies, I think we're going to see a delay in that. That trajectory is going to be longer than it would have been prior to the pandemic. And I think you're going to see manufacturers, including our big three manufacturers housed right here at home, kind of pivot more towards electrification, maybe retard a bit their investments into AV technology.
Well, I heard you say delay, not dead on arrival. So I'll take that for hopeful in 2020.
I am still looking forward to being able to have a glass of wine at dinner get into a vehicle, press a button, and have it take me home safely.
Nice. Guys, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. We've been speaking with Dustin Walsh at Cranes Detroit and Sandy Barua, president of the Detroit Regional Chamber. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I promise I won't make you spend one more second in 2020 than you already have so far. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be with you both. Happy holidays.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.